Today on Piano Jazz, Marian McPartland's guest is trumpeter Doc Cheatham, a program which was originally broadcast in 1992. Cheatham also played saxophone, but the trumpet became his instrument of choice, largely because of the influence of Louis Armstrong, whom he filled in for on a number of occasions. While much of his style was influenced by Armstrong, he also listened to many others and developed his own unique style, becoming a much-in-demand sideman, performing with several prominent bands and artists throughout his career, which spanned 70 years. But it was in the latter part of his career that he came into his own as a solo artist. We now join Marian McPartland as she welcomes Adolphus Anthony Cheatham, better known in the jazz world as Doc Cheatham.
My guest today on Piano Jazz is one of the true legends in jazz, a man who has played everywhere in the world and worked with many of the other jazz greats. He's one of the most lyrical, elegant players on the scene today, Adolphus Doc Cheatham. That's a wonderful name, Adolphus.
Thank you very much.
You were born in Nashville.
Yes, Nashville, Tennessee, June 13,
1905. 1905. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. You know, you're an amazing man. I've listened to you play for many years, and I just can't get over it. It's just, you're a great player and totally unique.
Thank you. Thank you
very much.
That's very nice of you.
Now, what's happening right now? I guess you've been playing at Sweet Basil.
Yes, we've been there quite a long time.
How long?
Well, I guess it'd be about 10 years, something like that.
They always said a musician couldn't keep a steady job.
Well, we were only hired to play a weekend, but they didn't know whether they were going to like us or not.
So oh, they that's kept pretty us, funny.
Yeah, they kept us funny.
And 10 years later, here you are.
Yes, yes.
Well, you've just played with everybody. I was so fascinated when I read that as a kid in Nashville, you didn't study the trumpet, you just picked it up?
Yes, I picked it up and taught myself, because there were no teachers down in Nashville in those days. So I had to teach myself.
And but then you played sax too for a while?
Yes, I played both at the same time. I would play one, then I'd play the other, make a lot of noise on both of them.
Well, what kind of how did you get started in the business? What was your first gig?
Well, you see, on my first gig, I was traveling with a road show, T.O.B. show, and one of the shows was Mary Lou Williams was on this show, and she and her husband and three or four more guys, they had singers. It's like a T.O.B. vaudeville show.
Oh, a vaudeville
That's one of the shows that I was on. I did several of those type of shows, but I always came back home because the money was never right, so, you know, and so I just did two or three of those, and my real first gig that amounted to anything was in Chicago when the show broke up in Chicago, and I was stranded. Everybody was stranded. I'd never been to Chicago before. But my first gig there was making a recording with Ma Rainey in 1926.
Oh, my God.
With Albert Wynn's Creole Jazz Band.
And didn't you do one with Bessie Smith also?
Yes, I played with Bessie, Clara, Trixie, all the Smiths, because I played a lot in the theater in Nashville. We had a little Bijou Theater. It was a vaudeville house, and all of the singers came through there. There was no other place for them to play, to show or sing without going through this vaudeville circuit called the TOBA. And I played for all of those singers, for Waters, everyone, and so many more.
But it's so fantastic to me. I mean, as a kid, did you just go up and audition or say, were they auditioning musicians or advertising for them for the show?
No.
How did you get into it?
They had rehearsals, like the show would open on a Monday morning, then at 12 o'clock, but they rehearsed before that. And most of the time, there was no music, because in the theater, the Bijou, there was only a drummer and a piano player. That's all. And a cornet player from New Orleans.
Yeah.
And that's three pieces. So I sat in on my saxophone with them. They were never in the music, because some of the singers and things just didn't have any music. They sang these songs without music, and we had to learn them from the pit. That's what they did.
Oh, my goodness. Well, obviously, you were just a natural-born talent. You know, you didn't go through any academy or music school. You just learned by doing.
That's right. I just learned by doing it. Yeah.
Well, let's play something. I'd love to do a tune. What should we do?
Louis Armstrong, he was one of my favorite teachers. He taught everybody, I mean, say.
Louis.
Yeah.
Yes, he
so
did.
So I'd like to do a I Double Dare You to Fall in Love with Me.
Okay.
I double dare you, sit over here. I double dare you to lend me your ear. Take off that high hat and let's get friendly. Don't be a scare cat. Can you take a dare? Oh, I double dare you, kiss me and then I double dare you to kiss me again. And just that look in your eyes means what I'm thinking. I double dare you to fall in love with me. I double dare you.
Truly amazing. You know, it's funny, I haven't thought about that tune for 40 years. That's an old tune, Doc.
Yes, it is.
Isn't it? Yes, but you must know millions of tunes.
Yes, I have remembered so many tunes.
And I mean, they're all in your head.
Yes.
Well, when you go to, how many people do you have in the band at Sweet Basil?
Well, it's only a quartet, trumpet and rhythm section. That's
You've got a nice piano player there, Chuck Foles.
Yes, he is very nice.
And who's the rhythm section?
Well, we have Jackie Williams as drummer and Bucky Calabrese as our bassist.
Oh, I played with both those guys.
Yeah.
I used to work with Jackie a lot. And yeah. Bucky, years ago, we made a record date with Dave McKenna. Nice rhythm section. Well, you brought up a tune that was written by Sam Coslow that... must be one of his early tunes. It's really kind of a surprise to me.
1925, I think.
Was it a dream, this tune's called?
Yes.
Can we do that?
Let's do that.
Thank you.
Was it a dream? Was it a dream? We were alone, and you were in my arms last night. Was it a dream? Was it a dream we made? He fell beneath the pale moonlight. Yes, I never knew, I never thought such bliss as this could fill me with a heart divine. I'm afraid I'll wake and find it was only in my mind. Was it a dream, or are you really mine? I never knew, I never thought such bliss as this could fill me with a heart divine. I'm afraid I'll wake and find it was only in my mind. Was it a dream, or are you really mine?
You know, that must have been one of Sam Coslow's earliest tunes.
Oh, what, yes.
What year was that written?
1924.
Oh, my goodness. He must have been just a budding composer. Because I met Sam years later. In fact, he actually sponsored a record date for me, and I did so many of his songs, like Cocktails for Two. That was probably his best-known tune. He was such a nice guy. But now, how do you go about learning all these tunes? Did you just hear them and decide to do them?
No, you know, I was in Chicago when they recorded this song, and I was playing saxophone, and I was doing a lot of work outside of Chicago with small groups like Lillian Armstrong and other little groups, maybe piano and trumpet, and they were playing all those songs back in those days. Was It a Dream? It was a big hit in Chicago. When Louis recorded it, she insisted on Louis recording this song.
Who was Earl Hines. Who was the singer?
Lily DeShields. Lily DeShields.
And was she a big name then?
Well, she was from New Orleans. No, she wasn't. But she wanted to do some singing, and she came to Chicago, and she wanted Louis Armstrong to record, and Earl Hines to do the recording on this. She did many more songs, but this is one of her biggest hits.
What was that? Jimmy McPartland, my husband, he used to talk about hearing Louis and Earl. Was it the Grand Terrace? Was that the club?
Well, they played, no, I think Earl Hines was at the Grand Terrace, but Louis was at the Sunset.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
That's right.
I was at the Dreamland.
Did you have a band of your own?
No, I was with Albert Wynn. He was from New Orleans, trombone player. He had a Creole jazz band. That's why I learned all the New Orleans tunes in Chicago. I stayed there long enough to learn all those New Orleans melodies and things.
Well, you just took off from home and you just took to life on the road, I guess.
No, I was stranded. I was with the Mary Lou Williams and Bearcat Williams road show.
Oh,
and we broke up because the money was always bad, and I was stuck in Chicago. So first thing I did was got a job washing dishes down in the Loop. That was my first time in Chicago, so I didn't know anything about it. And someone took me up to hear Louis Armstrong, Freddie Keppard, and Joe Oliver, and all those great New Orleans musicians. And then I said, well, this is what I'd like to do.
Well, now, when did you go with a group? I never know who is in this group. I've heard of it so much. McKinney's Cotton Pickers.
That was right after I came from Europe. I was with John McKinney's Cotton Pickers in 1930. 1929, 30 years.
Who was in that group?
Oh, they had Don Redman was the lead of that group.
Oh, okay.
But he left by the time after I was there a week. Then Benny Carter came in and directed the band. Well, yeah, some of the names I know. You had Claude Jones and Butter, they called him, and Joe Smith. And some of the names, it's hard for me to remember all the names.
It's funny, Benny.
And Billy Taylor on bass. And it had quite a great, great band it was. Entertaining band.
I read somewhere you were with that band for 10 years.
No. I was with that band less than 2 years.
Oh.
Just the very end of the career of that band, because they finally broke up. Because, the dancers at that time, places to play for dancers began to fall off a lot. And they just didn't hire any more big bands.
So did you stay in Chicago?
Well, the funny thing about it, when I left McKinney, I had a call to come to New York to join Cab Calloway at the Cotton Club.
Oh, yeah.
And I was with Cab for 9 years.
Oh, that's where I made the mistake. It was with Cab. You were almost 10 years. But I read somewhere where you said that Cab was just like one of the guys.
He was no different from anyone else in the band. He did everything we did with us. Dad played with us, shoot craps, play cards. Everything we did, he was right there.
He's a fantastic guy. I mean, he seems to have as much energy now. I guess I haven't seen him for a little while, but the night Eddie Condon's closed, he was up there, and Jimmy and I were there, and I was amazed at how, a terrific energy and vitality this guy has.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I run into him every time. Sometimes, like I'm in Europe, he's coming back on the same plane, but I didn't know he was there, but he heard about my being there, so we got together. He's amazing. He's doing better now, I think, than he ever did in his life. The people just crowd in to see him everywhere he goes.
Well, he's not only a legend, he's a living legend, and he's out there doing his thing. It's admirable.
He
it's wonderful.
I don't know how he does it.
Well, listen, I don't know how you do it. As for me,
I never think about myself,
I'm having such a wonderful afternoon with my guest, fabulous Doc Cheatham. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. I'd like to switch off and maybe play a piano solo for you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
In fact, you played a little riff or a little melody when we were warming up, and it made me think of a tune that I'd like to play. Sunday, Monday, or Always?
Yes, beautiful song.
All right, here goes. Thank you. I have to thank you for that, because you were you were just warming up, and you went or just something.
Those things happen, you know, just unconsciously. I can't understand it. It happens to me all the time. I'm always doing something. I'm wondering, what is this I'm thinking about? Isn't that strange?
Well, there's so many tunes. I can't even think where that one came from. I'm trying to think if I think Louis did it.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
But you mentioned a tune that's one of my all-time favorites. Maybe you'd play it, Sweet Lorraine.
Oh, yes. Fine. I've just found joy. I'm as happy as a baby boy, playing with a brand new choo-choo toy. When I'm with my sweet Lorraine, she has a pair of eyes that are bluer than the summer skies. And when you see them, you will realize why I love my sweet Lorraine. And when it's raining, I don't miss the sun, because it's a nice sweet smile. Just to think I'm the lucky one that will lead her down the aisle. Each night I pray that nobody steals her heart away. Oh yes, just can't wait until the happy day when I marry sweet Lorraine. Thank you.
I just love that tune. That's a great song. You know, this is such a wonderful experience. I'm having such a good time. My guest is the incredible, wonderful Doc Cheatham. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. Oh, you brought up another one that I've only heard Louis Armstrong do. Give me a kiss to build a dream on. Do you do that one?
Yes.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
All right.
Can we do it?
Yes.
Okay.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Yes, kiss me before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Darling, before we part, a kiss to build a dream on. And when I'm alone with my fancies, I will always dream of you. Yes, weaving my romances and wishing that they come true. So give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live. So give me all you can give, a kiss to build a dream on. Thank you. And when I'm alone with my fantasies, I will dream of you, weaving my romances and wishing that they come true. So give me your chops for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live. Give me what you can give, a kiss to build a dream on.
Oh, that's wonderful. You said, give me your chops. It's just like Louis. People say, what's that mean?
Chops. Yeah.
Chops. Well, it's funny. Louis always used to announce, it was another tune by Ray Noble, The Touch of Your Lips.
Yes.
And the voice is The Touch of Your Chops.
Yeah.
It's so cute.
Yes,
oh, boy. You did quite a bit of teaching at one time, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Was that in Chicago or was that New York?
No, that was New York. You know, I received a summons to go to the Philippines to join an army band over there. They needed a lead trumpet player.
Yeah.
So I was very nervous about it. I went down to the bureau and they said, "Well, yeah, we will want a physical." I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "I'm 39." He said, "Yes." We said, "Well, You have a decision to make. Well, we want you to go to the Philippines," and said, "Either go over there or you go into some kind of service." So I said, "Well, send me to the service. I'll do a service job." And they sent me to the post office out in Long Island, U.S. post office, and I worked out there for a long until August, about almost when the war was over. I was lifting bags and doing everything. They worked me to death. But I'd rather do that than go out to the Philippines. So I chose that. Not that I really didn't want to see the service anyway, to be honest with you. But most of those fellows in that band died from some kind of fever out there.
Oh, and I was very
glad. Yes, I was very glad that I chose the post office instead of going out there.
Then you had to sort of quit the business for a little while.
I had to quit for a little while.
But you went right back,
though. Oh, yes, I went back after 2 years.
And then where did you go?
When I started teaching.
Oh, okay.
I was teaching. Most of my pupils were from Latin countries, like Santo Domingo, Cuba, Puerto Rico. I had about 60 musicians from those countries.
Kidding. Well, you actually worked with some Latin bands, didn't you,
for a while? Oh, I did,
yes,
for a long time.
But that's a whole other style of playing, isn't it?
That's altogether a style of playing, yes. I was with Machito as the first Latin band I played with. And I didn't do so well in that band because it took me so long to learn the rhythm, the beats. I couldn't get with it, you know.
Really?
Yes, it's quite a different thing. It's just opposite from our type of rhythm.
Yeah.
I mean, our counting of our bars and things.
Yeah, right.
And so I didn't stay with that band very long, and I liked it so much I went down on Fifth Avenue and 110th Street where they had a joint where there were fights and everything for the little Latin band, and I stayed with that band a long time until I kind of felt like I knew the beat. So I finally got on to it, and that's a break with some, even Paris Prado. I went to South America with Paris Prado's big band, and I was a soloist in that band.
So tell me, back to the teaching. What do you teach kids?
Well, the first thing they wanted, the pupils that came to me, they're fairly nice trumpet players, but they came to New York, or this country, I'd say, to learn to play jazz. That's very difficult. Because it is as hard, it was as hard for them as it was for me to play Latin in
yeah,
a Latin band.
It's like changing your whole conception
your whole
of a
thing.
Beat.
Changing whole thing. And some of them didn't understand why I couldn't, why they weren't able to understand what I was trying to tell them. So I told one fellow, he said, "Oh, you must know how to help me." So I told myself, "You must go buy you a whole lot of jazz records and take them home and listen to them night and day." I said, "That, because you don't know any tune, not one tune." Now, that's sad. So
yeah,
I said, "You don't know any tunes." He didn't understand it.
So did he go?
I don't know. I never heard of him.
Oh, he didn't come back.
What kid came down? His mother brought him. She was a great big woman, his little boy. And she brought him in there. She stopped on 48th Street and bought a trumpet, because that's what he wanted. She didn't know what kind it was or whether it was good or bad. Bought him a book. And he brought it up to the place where I was. And she walked in there with this kid and said, "Listen, how long do you think it'll take you to teach my son to play?" I said, "Lady, he may never learn." I said, "Who knows how long it's going to take?" Well, she reached out in the case, showed me the trumpet. It was awful. And showed me a book. It says, "Dizzy Gillespie" on the book. I said, "What is it?" He said, "Well, that's what I want to learn, who I want to learn to play like." I said, "You can't." "Oh, yes." So I said, "Listen, you have to start from the bottom." "I don't want to start from the bottom. I want to play like this in a lesson." So I said, "Bye." I said, "You find somebody else." I said, "I don't know how in the world I can do anything like that. But I can't play like this. I mean, I've been playing for 1,000 years. How in the world am I going to teach you to play like somebody? I don't understand."
It's so funny because you reminded me of something, having somebody come in to me when I was doing a little teaching and say, "Look, I don't really want to go through all the rudiments. I just want to play some of those good chords like George Shearing. Just want to play a few chords." So I said the same thing. You know, there's no easy way. Play a few chords. You have to play scales and do the whole thing. So I think I probably got rid of that person, too.
Yeah, you have to get rid of them. They get rid of themselves because you refuse to attempt to help them.
Well, do you still ever coach anybody? Or have
people? I had a couple of guys. I had a fellow from the Navy. He came to me and... he was playing trumpet all the way on the side of his mouth like that. And he says, "Look, I'm having trouble." I says, "Well, your position is wrong." So I showed him how to lip and everything, keep his lips closed like that.
Yeah.
And I says, he says, "Well, I can't do that." I said, "Well, what do you mean you can't do that?" I said, "You can do anything." I said, "There's no such a thing as can't." He was about 25 or something years old, big fella. And so I put him in, I got a little mirror for him, and I held him up and said, and put him, got his position like that, and I put the mirror. So, "You see that?" He said, "Yes." So, "You keep that there for the rest of your life, and don't you change it, whether you can play or not. If you have trouble, just forget about it. Just keep it there." And taught him how to tongue between his teeth. And he walked out of the studio, he bought a little glass, and he was walking in the street with the glass in front of his mouth, and he almost got run over at the cross street with this little people looking at him. But, you know, he came back in about a few years, and he had it down pat, playing beautiful, all up in the range and everything. He said, "I did it." I said, "Well, I knew you could do it if you wanted."
Did he ever get good, become a professional?
No, he was in the Navy.
Oh.
So I never saw him anymore after that.
Isn't that that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Gee, and I'm thinking about, I want to play something for you, but I'm trying to think of, I'd like to try to think of some of these older tunes. And
how about "The Man I Love" or "Lover
All right.
Man"?
Either one. Oh, "Lover Man," that's a great tune.
Yes, it is.
Ram Ramirez. Yes. Okay. Ooh, that was a good choice. You know, I am
beautiful.
See what you made me do? Yeah. I haven't thought about that tune for a long time. Now, Ram Ramirez, we had him here on Piano Jazz.
That's all?
Oh, yeah. And he played his version of yes. that tune. Yeah. Now, that's another of those, like 40 or 50 years ago.
Yes.
Do you play that too?
Oh, sure. You never get tired of that song. Do you notice? One song that you never get tired of.
Well, because it's got such a pretty progressions. You know, there's certain tunes that lay right, I'm sure, on your instrument too, but for piano, you know, in certain way the bridge goes or something. As a tune that Mel Torme wrote, Born to be Blue, do you know that one?
I've heard it.
That you would really sound wonderful on that tune. Blue. And it has the bridge goes somewhere totally where you don't expect.
Uh-huh.
And it just makes it a very dramatic kind of a tune.
Mm.
Well, let's see. I'm having such a wonderful afternoon with my guest, fabulous Doc Cheatham. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. You know, I've enjoyed this afternoon so much talking about all these places that you played. In fact, we haven't even touched on, when I think of what you did, you worked with Benny Goodman, didn't you, for
yes,
a while?
Yes, Sextet.
How was that? He never gave you the ray?
You know, he treated me marvelous. I saw so many guys that left the band by his request. I couldn't believe it. I was always wondering when my time was coming with him. But he treated me very well.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, I'm glad to hear that because even Teddy had, I remember because I also worked with Benny and I really had a hard time seeming to do anything right for him. And I was telling Teddy Wilson about it and he says, Benny didn't know what he wanted. He just knew what he didn't want.
That's very good. That's very good.
So that made me feel better because I thought it was me. But then all these other people, that you were with Eddie Heywood for a while. And what was that great thing that he wrote, Canadian Sunset?
Canadian Sunset, yes.
Were you with him when he wrote that?
Yes.
And Buck Clayton, you worked with Buck?
Yes.
And you went to Russia with Louis?
No, I went with the New York Jazz Repertory.
Oh.
Dick Hyman was the leader of that.
Oh, where did I get that you went?
No, oh. Only time I worked with Louis was in New York at the Strand, because he had his band, Lou Russell's band, and one of the trumpet players something happened, I had to replace them down there. And I worked with Louis in Chicago, and I worked for him, as he took off some nights, and I worked at the Vindel Theater for him. He was very good to me.
He was good to everybody.
He was
a wonderful man, wasn't
he? Yes, he was.
Did you ever know Lil?
Oh, yes. Lil was the first, that's the first job I got in Chicago when I first got there. I met Louie at the Union.
Yeah.
And she was at the Union. She and the president, Lottie Hightower, were very good friends. And she was always spending a lot of time up there. And I went up for a card. And they say, well, I'm sorry, you cannot work in Chicago. Well, if we give you a card, you can't work in Chicago at all. You have to go work outside of Chicago. And I said, well, I have to do that. So Lil was there, and she said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Nashville. And Lillian and Armstrong and the lady president graduated from Fisk University in Nashville.
Right, Fisk.
So I had my connections right there.
So
Lil introduced me to Louis. Louis made it possible that I could work in the Dreamland. I wouldn't been able to wait because Al Capone brought these musicians from New Orleans, and he had a law: no one can work in the nightclub unless they're from New Orleans. That's why they wouldn't allow me to work in Chicago.
I never knew that.
Yes. Oh, you had to be from New Orleans, else you couldn't get a job there. He opened up all the places there, all kind of joints. He sold, you know, the Southerners beer and stuff like that. He had everything locked up.
Did you ever play clubs when he came in?
Yes. Oh, many times. He would come into Dream. Dream, and most of the time, I don't know why, he liked the guy named Bill Bottoms. He was the owner of that club or something. I think he must have been a member of the gang. They would come in there at just as we were closing.
Yeah.
And we'd have to start all over and play the show and everything.
Oh, my God.
Over. They would send up all kind of tips and all kind of, they didn't care.
Jimmy once told me that he liked to hear My Gal Sal.
I wouldn't be surprised. But I don't remember that. I just remember that we entertained him.
But you don't remember what he liked, what he wanted to hear?
No, because they came in big bunches, you know, and sat down, and we just started all over again.
You better not.
We played until they left.
Even if it was 6 o'clock
that's
in the
right,
morning.
That's right.
And you didn't get any extra money.
Oh, they threw up $50 bills, $100 bills, and 20s at the band. Everybody was rich when they came out. Oh, yes, they took good care of the band.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, thank God they did something right. They liked the musicians.
They liked the clubs. They had some fabulous cabarets in Chicago. I mean, fabulous. The reviews and they weren't tight with their money. They just spent, and I saw a lot of things happening in Chicago during the time I was there.
You're nice to hear Jimmy talk about all these things and Al Capone coming into the club.
That's right, yes.
Well, gee. The time is all gone, Doc. This is terrible. But let's play one more tune.
Why not?
But before we do, I want to thank you for spending the afternoon and being so wonderful.
Well, my pleasure. And I enjoy
just enjoying it.
I'm very proud and very honored to have played with you.
Well, likewise.
I play with every piano in the world, but now I'm happy.
Well, me too. What should we do? Love You Madly?
That,
could we do that?
All right. Yes, I think so. Let's try it.
That's a good song. I love that thing.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and her guest from the year 1992, Doc Cheatham. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Andrew Milano, mastering engineer Bill Sexton. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. You can find out more about the artists and music on Piano Jazz from our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Support for the original production of this episode was provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and Exxon Corporation. Support for digital archiving was provided by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org, and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.